Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, guess what?
What?
We've booked a live show. We've booked a Christmas show. It's on the 2nd of December at the Clapham Grand in London.
Oh, yay! My God. We're going to see each other's faces. We're going to see each other's bodies and so on. I'm just genuinely deliriously happy that we're going to see each other in the flesh, and hopefully we're going to see some of you as well. So tickets you can get from claphamgrand.com.
If you're not in London, then you can also buy tickets to watch on the stream.
Yeah, so anywhere in the world, it will be at 7 o'clock UK time. So whatever time that is in your country, it will be streaming live. And there's two shows. We're doing two shows. So it's going to be 2 hours of entertainment. Two fantastic guests. The second show will be a lot drunker than the first.
So wherever you are in the world, it's okay to get drunk, because it will be drinking time in London. Join us, please. Also, because of COVID, it is now a requirement that you have to buy two tickets at a time. Now, if you're like me and you like to go to shit alone, don't worry. We can hook you up with another person that's going on their own, pair you up, make sure that your personalities match. We'll do a full psych profile and we'll fit you together. How's that sound?
Do you know what? That sounds perfect. If you're like Taylor and your husband will no longer go to things with you, that's Clapham Grand, 2nd of December. Buy tickets online. Come to the live stream. It's going to be so much fun.
Christmas show.
Christmas show.
Christmas show. Twinkle, twinkle.
Longest ad ever.
Tickets you can get from Clapham Grand. Don't say that. The Clapham Grand.
Oh my God. New sponsor.
Drunk women.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
No, I was like the only Cockney person in the crowd. After that, they were like, well, let's just get rid of the normal people. Let's just.
I'd rather be a solent than a cunt.
I'd bring in a Scooby.
If I've learned anything from this podcast, it's don't lick a crime scene.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. This week we are joined by the fantastic
actress, comedian, author, podcaster, hearing aid wearer, knitter, dairy intolerant, it's Samantha Bain.
Yay! Yay! Thank you for my list. I loved it.
Two of them are lies. Which ones? That's not true.
Right in. No.
No, I'm very honest and I'm oversharer, so they're all true, and I can definitely add more to that. Maybe throughout the episode.
We can
so
gather.
At the end, there's like an essay of the things that are qualities, I'm going to call them.
Awesome. Well, this sounds like you're going to be the perfect addition to the force. Sam, can you tell us, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Yeah, I feel like I've been victim of like loads of crimes and I just can't like remember them all, like emotional crimes, fashion crimes. Yeah. One Christmas, my mum dressed me and my little sister up in tartan matching dresses. And we were like four and we had like a photo shoot against like a hazy background. It was
horrific. My goodness.
I remember the other day I couldn't remember the word for tartan and I said to my boyfriend, I said, oh, it's the Scottish squares. That's not a way of describing tartan.
Well, that's also a dance, isn't it? Squares in Scotland, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's just the way I dance when I'm in Scotland. No, but the crime I would like to talk about is when I had my laptop stolen.
Oh, no.
From my house in Camden that I was living in at the time.
Yeah.
But it was stolen because my housemate... the shithead. I can swear on this podcast, can't I?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Explicit content warning. My housemate, the shithead. He, like, always had a problem with his knee, and he was always doing, like, knee exercises, and he rented a BMW car, and he just told everyone about it. Anyway, he left the door of the flat open.
Ugh. He left like such a fucker.
Yeah, he left for work and just left the front door open. So someone was just walking past, and obviously he just popped in and decided to steal my laptop.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, no. And, like, was your flatmate sorry? Did he, like, admit that it was him?
Yeah, he did. I had to... Well, how bad is this? This is, like, hashtag first world problems. I didn't notice it was gone for, like, a week.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm a creative person and I don't really do work on a regular basis. So, like, I didn't know it was gone. And then one day I was like, oh, where's my laptop? I'm sure I left it on the kitchen table. And we'd all discussed the incident where the front door was open, but we didn't think anything had been stolen. And then a week later, I realised my laptop had been stolen.
So okay, you know what? I'm already thinking, did you live with other flatmates as well as this guy?
Yes.
Someone else took it and they knew they could blame it on this guy.
No, well, he was the worst one. The other ones were so, like, if they someone was going to steal it, it would have been him.
Okay.
He replaced it, right?
No. So he said, I'll buy you a new one at the time. So I was like, okay, fine. And then I had to, like, call the police. I tried to get it on insurance, but I couldn't. But I had to do a police report and stuff. And then he just never really bought me one. And I was at that stage of my life where I was like, trying to be a strong woman but also apologizing all the time. Like, now I would have, like, punched him in the face and, like, taken his credit card. And
this feels
don't
like the 90s feminism.
Now I would have been like, you said you were gonna buy me a laptop, buy me one because it's your fault. But at the time I was like, oh my god, he said he'd buy me one, but so, like, maybe he's like buying it and he just hasn't, like, mentioned it.
Yeah, I've like, just got to, like, give him it. Like, loads of time and maybe like cook him dinner or something.
Yeah, maybe I'll, like, suck his cock and then I'll get the laptop. Like, be really nice. And I'll be careful of his knee because he's got a knee injury. So he never bought me one, but I had to call the police about it and they asked me if I wanted counselling. I remember thinking, oh my god, that's so nice and also a great way to get free counselling.
I want to talk about my mum, but yes, I was robbed.
Yeah, because the counselling waiting lists are long, like, for NHS. So you could be like, yeah, I feel like someone really invaded my space, which reminds me of a time when I was six and
the
school children used to bully me, you know?
We've discovered another life hack, you guys.
That's a good life hack.
I don't know if this is still the situation during the pandemic that the police can hook you up with some sweet counselling.
Yes,
but let's try it.
As long as you say... that you were invaded, your personal space was invaded.
When I had my phone stolen, I was offered counselling. It was literally just the phone, and it wasn't taken from my person. I put it down somewhere. And whether the counselling was someone saying, Hannah, just do better. Do better. Yeah. Look after your shit.
It's a really aggressive life coach going, come on. We always ask our guests, what would you say if you had the perp or perps in custody? They can't do anything to you. You can say or do whatever you want to them. And I don't know if we're counting the robber or your flatmate or both.
Okay, wow. Okay, well, if it was the robber, I'd be like, well, fair enough. The front door was open. We'd all have a look in. We'd be like, oh, what's this house like?
Yeah. And the laptop. He's only human.
Yeah, the laptop was. I love that you've assumed it was a man. Did I assume it was a man? Yeah. Evil people are men, aren't they? Always.
We've all got our own biases that we need to work on.
I know. We're going to call evil man. I'd be like, fair enough, you know.
Yeah.
I'd say, please don't share the nude images on my laptop. Yes. That was the main thing I was really worried about when my laptop was stolen.
Fair enough.
Not any of the work or like my bank details. I was like, oh my God, I think I've got some nude photos on there. And also I had nude photos of like ex-boyfriends.
Wow.
Ooh, in your special folder.
Yeah, okay. Special folder saving for bribery years later.
The salacious files.
I was quite upset by that.
Damn.
That's horrible. Yeah. That feeling.
But if it's any comfort, like they literally wipe them straight away, don't they, computers? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, well, and then to resell them.
Yeah. I always think
that. They haven't got time to wank to everyone's porn.
That is a bit, it would be actually, I think it would be more offensive if they like logged in and found the nude photos and then they were like, well, these are shit, I'm just going to wipe them and like not wanked over them. It's like that thing of like, someone once wrote to me to ask me for like a signed photo. My God, I've made it big time. And he asked for it to be laminated.
Ooh.
And I was like, he's gonna be wiping that clean.
Yikes.
And half of me was horrified and the other half of me was like incredibly flattered. Cause like, you know, he could have been wanking over like, there's like actual porn out there where people are naked and having sex. And there's like incredibly hot people in the world that he could be wanking over. But he wanted to wank over like a photo of me doing a pouty face, trying to be a serious actress. Like, so... It was a dilemma.
The audacity, though, to ask you to laminate it.
Yeah, like, laminate what? It yourself, buddy.
Get your own laminator, you pervert.
Buy your own technology, jeez.
Yeah, stop outsourcing.
I think he wanted me to know.
Yes, that was the extra kink. Yeah.
I didn't, by the way, send a laminated photo.
That was my next question.
the listeners are going to want closure on this.
Yeah, if anyone wants one, no. Laminate it yourself. Print it off the internet.
Did you send him anything? Or were you like, no, I think... You were like, we're done here.
No, and also by this stage, I don't even think I'd like done that much telly. So I hadn't even been in like, because people, like nowadays, people are like, want a photo of me on set of The Crown or something. Right. But like at the time, I think I'd done like really obscure stuff. So I was just like, this guy is just trying to get laminated photos of actresses and he doesn't even give a shit about me.
He's just using me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Okay, good. Good. Hard pass. Good call.
He could be a serial killer and it's to wipe off the blood. I'm just throwing out a different possibility.
Okay. In that case, I would have sent one.
Yeah, that's morally fine.
Yeah.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
This is a classic story. It is a tale as old as time. This is the story of a man from a well-connected family who goes on to commit murder. Now, this case made history for two reasons. Number one, it was one of the earliest uses of forensic evidence to identify a body. Ooh. And number two, it was the first time ever that the judge issued an instruction of reasonable doubt to the jury as opposed to complete certainty.
Wow. Ooh.
So question, what year is this?
Ooh, I think reasonable doubt has been around for quite a while. I would say it's maybe just over 100 years old. So I would go 1920.
Okay.
I think it's always shocking, these things, isn't it? It's like, oh my God, it only happened in that year. So I'm going to say 2019.
Okay. Bold. I love it. Taylor?
So you just said forensic evidence, but nothing mm-hmm. more specific.
It was one of the earliest uses of forensic evidence to identify a body, and it was the first time ever that the judge issued the instruction of reasonable doubt.
See, I reckon that's a long old time ago. I'm going to say, 1837.
Okay, in that case, Taylor, you are the closest. It is 1849.
Okay, not 2019. That was a baller move, Sam. That's the first answer that you're giving. Yes, please.
That was.
Straight in.
That was.
The murder case was highly publicised and sensational, partly due to the gruesome nature of the crime. Trigger warning, this is going to be gruesome.
Oh my God, hashtag instead of trigger warning.
Katie is desperate to be a millennial. She's like, oh God, I say hashtag all the time when I mean...
What is it you guys do again?
Guys, hashtag racism, sexual abuse, let's have some fun.
I think hashtag gruesome... is I want to check out that hashtag. Like, what's going to be on
would,
that?
Like, click on that
immediately. Just though, I'd panic that I can't spell gruesome, and like when you do a hashtag, it then doesn't give you spell check.
Yeah,
and that is my biggest qualm.
No, but it hooks you up if other people have written it that way.
You can join in the gruesome conversation.
You can join in all the badly spelled ones.
I like when the misspelled ones are also trending, though. It's like, wow, enough of you dickheads couldn't spell this that's trending.
It's we live in such great times.
It's amazing.
So this murder case was highly publicised and sensational, partly because it was so gruesome and partly because of the high social station of the victim and murderer.
Mm.
So question, is the victim male or female?
Ooh, I don't think they're wasting their forensic money on a female serial killer, or a female murderer. So I think that the victim's male. No, I think the killer is male. And actually, I think maybe the victim is also male. I'm going to go man-on-man crime.
Okay, excellent. Any other guesses?
Well, I think the victim is a woman.
Okay.
And if she's got a high social status, maybe the queen of the time. Was there? Okay. Who was the queen of the time?
The queen.
Was there a queen or was it a king?
I mean, it depends.
Where are we in the world? England?
We haven't got to that yet. We will in a sec.
The queen. Someone killed the queen.
Okay, I love it, Sam.
Weren't you on the crown? The queen of the time?
And that was my role. Yeah, killing the queen. No, I was like the only Cockney person in the crown. Like... Series one, and then after that they were like, well, let's just get rid of the normal people. Let's just the posh ones in.
No one's tuning in for this.
Yeah.
Oh God. So far, Sam has guessed that the Queen was murdered in 2019, and I love it.
Well, apparently every time like a big event happens, like all the press and PR people and journalists all have to like prepare, like if they're going away to some big event, they have to prepare just in case one of the royal family die, normally the Queen or Prince Philip, and they have to have like headlines ready and everything like that in case there's breaking news and
just
they're
so
not
they have
there
to keep updating the obituary stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you know, actually, like, I remember reading that if the Queen dies, the BBC won't play any comedy for, like, 2 weeks or something. So the Queen isn't going to die until I get my first sitcom on the BBC.
Yeah!
That's just my fucking luck. So don't worry, she'll be fine.
There are ridiculous rules. Like, my friend was working on the Olympic opening ceremony when we had it in the UK, and they had to rehearse singing God Save the King just in case the Queen died.
Oh, my God. They have so little faith in her. No, that's, I get it. I totally
she was jumping out of that plane with 007. I mean, my God.
Yeah, I mean, they had to cover it.
She's risk heavy.
Taylor, male or female victim?
I was thinking along the same lines. Female victim, high status.
Okay,
but male...
only Hannah is correct. You
Yay!
Guys. Okay. I said it was considered important. Everybody is a man. So we have two men. Now, one is the murderer and one is the victim. I'm going to tell you a tiny bit about both their backgrounds, and then you have to tell me which is which. Okay, so person one indulged as a child and pampered in youth, had a petulant and fussy disposition, but was known for his kindly nature. Person two, suffered poor health as a youngster, which led him to want to study medicine, admitted to university age 15. Which one of those is a killer and which one of those is the victim?
Well, the first one sounded a lot like the qualities that some people might say members of the royal family have.
Okay.
So I just want to say that maybe my queen thing wasn't super off.
Okay.
But I think, I don't know. The other one was trained as a doctor, which makes me think like creepy, wants to cut people open to see inside them.
Okay.
But then also I don't want to fall for the like lower status, lower class is the murderer. So I'm going to say that the doctor guy is the victim. And the posh guy is the murderer because he thinks he can get away with everything because he's so entitled. And I bet he's white and straight too.
Okay. So you're saying person one, indulged as a child, pampered in youth, had a petulant and fussy disposition, but was known for his kindly nature, murderer.
Yeah.
And you're saying person two, suffered poor health, made him want to study medicine, admitted to university, age 15, is the victim. Okay, I love it. Taylor and Hannah, do you agree or disagree?
I do agree. My first thought was that the petulant, posh one was the murderer.
I think it's the other way around then. I think that the doctor is the murderer, just because it sort of like brings to mind Jack the Ripper, etc. And he was thought possibly to be a doctor because of the way that he sort of like took the organs out of the body. So, yeah. So I think that actually a murdery doctor, that sounds plausible to me.
Okay. So...
a murdery doctor. Sorry.
We've got Sam and Taylor saying that person one, posh and pampered, is the killer. And we've got Hannah saying that person two, ill as a youngster, became a doctor, is the killer. I can now reveal that Taylor and Sam are correct and Hannah is wrong.
Damn.
Person one is John White Webster, born 1793. He is the murderer. Person
John White Webster, of course he is, double barreled. Hello, I'm John White Webster.
And George Parkman is the victim. So our perp is this John White Webster. He is very well to do. His grandfather and fortune is a merchant, blah, blah, blah. His family are friends with the Shaws. I'm assuming George Bernard Shaw, but I actually don't know enough about American history. That if it's not in Hamilton or Watchmen, I don't know anything about it.
That's a good guess for a Shaw, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, what other Shaws even are there?
Maybe he was in Jersey Shore or something.
Yeah. Or just people who live by the sea. Like, he really loves seaside towns.
Yeah, yeah, big fan. Okay, question. Which Ivy League school did our murderer graduate from?
This was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they've all been around for... What, do we know what country we're in yet?
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's America.
America, okay. I don't know any American schools, so... Oh, well, no, I do. Princeton. Harvard.
Okay. Okay.
I'm just listing schools. I'm going to go for Princeton because it is my first.
Okay, Sam's going Princeton. Taylor and Hannah.
Harvard, because Taylor, I know that you went to an Ivy League school, right, didn't you? So you, like, know which ones, and I need to take the other obvious one because I don't know anymore. Sorry for cutting you off, but now do your thing.
Hannah's going Harvard. Taylor, what are you saying?
I went to one of the most insecure Ivies because we had, like, chants for all the other schools when we'd play them in hockey because that was, like, one sport we were good at. It was the only sport we were good at. So, like, Princeton, we'd go, Princeton's in New Jersey. And... I now realize just how insecure that made us sound. So that was Cornell, go Big Red. And I would love it if it was one, because I went to Columbia too, guys. No big deal. Look at me now, drinking 8-pound wine for two bottles.
I got my wine on a Tesco meal deal, just saying. The cost per item is very low. It's all for like £10.
Just going back to your chant, Taylor, I remember I went to Southampton Solent University, and I don't condone this chant because it's horrible and I have nothing against Southampton University, but obviously Southampton University is a much better school. And the chant was, I'd rather be a Solent than a cunt, which was... So proved its point, really, didn't it?
So original, the wordplay there, stunning.
Yeah.
We also had a really nerdy a cappella group. And this is topical because obviously I love We Didn't Start the Fire, and they would sing We Didn't Go to Harvard, and there was just the whole thing.
Wow.
I'm going to throw a curveball and say Dartmouth.
Okay. You know what? I love it. The correct answer is Harvard.
Of yes. course it was.
Cunts. If this was pointless, you would have won.
Okay. So this guy graduated from Harvard College in 1811 and Harvard Medical College in 1815. So he is also a doctor, guys.
Uh-oh.
Pretty good marriage material. Anyone turned on now?
Doctor versus and... doctor.
Yeah, yes, doctor and doctor crime.
Doctor off. He gets his degrees, does a bit of travelling, gets married to Harriet Frederica Hickling. I don't want to be too anti-patriarchy, but this is a guy that failed upwards. So I am anti-patriarchy. But he started a medical practice in Boston, but he was unsuccessful, so he changed careers. In 1824, he was appointed a lecturer for chemistry, mineralogy, and geology at Harvard Medical College.
He failed being a doctor, so they mm-hmm. made him a lecturer at Harvard. Like, what?
Is this the first use of those who can't do teach?
Yeah.
Yes.
And in chemistry, just different science.
Yeah, but also, I mean, like, it's the olden days. He's a dude. Question, was he a good teacher?
No.
Correct. Most of my sources say that he was pretty bad. Occasionally, he'd do something fun and kind of showy with some pyrotechnics, but otherwise very boring. Loads of my sources talked about how dull he was and that students would buy tickets for his lectures and then they wouldn't go.
Oh my God, it's like that Trump rally and those K-pop yes. kids. Yeah, I love it.
This guy got TikToked.
Amazing.
So that's what the young people say, isn't it? I'm going to be a millennial. You're all into TikTok, aren't you? But anyway, so he's boring, he's bad at it, but he's failing upwards, so he gets promoted again after 3 years in 1927. He gets the Irving Professorship. One of my sources threw shade at him and said he was tolerated rather than respected, and he only retained his position on account of its comparative insignificance. That is a burn. So he was also, this is probably significant, he was also considered a bit macabre. There's an anecdote about how at dinner party at his house, he amazed his guests by lowering the lights, fitting a noose around his own neck and lolling his head forward, tongue protruding over a bowl of blazing chemicals to give a ghastly imitation of a man being hanged.
Wow, they really did not have TikTok, did they?
Imagine if I was like, guys, do you want to come round for dinner? And then I fed you the starter, which would be tomatoes with mozzarella, because it's easy to do. All you have to do is
and
slice.
Delicious.
And then I just got out a noose and just hung my head over a bag of chemicals. And I was like, wow, fun times. Now for the main. Like, yeah. What? On Come exactly. Dine With Me, you would not get good...
Oh my
Boats.
God. Yeah. Question, which Ivy League school did our victim graduate from?
I've heard of this one called Harvard. And I think
Hannah's going because... Harvard?
Yeah. Also, I think maybe they went to school together and yeah. this was a proper rivalry and it wasn't just a random murder.
Okay. Anyone deviate from that? You're happy with Harvard?
I'm going to go yeah. with Yale.
Okay. Sam, any difference?
I can't think of any other Ivy League schools, okay. so I'm going to go with Harvard.
Okay, you guys are correct. It was Harvard. So this is the guy that was ill and then really wanted to learn medicine and was super bright and admitted to Harvard when he was only 15 years old. And he also delivered the salutary oration in 1809. He was super rich too, this guy. But
oh,
he
I
was,
assumed he wasn't because he had a bad start in life. That's bad.
Well, he
bad
was stance. Ill. He was ill. He had a bad illness. He was still super rich, but he is nice because he saw a lecture by Benjamin Rush, which inspired him to take an interest in the terrible state of asylums for the mentally ill. And after his degree, he travelled, he went to France, he met French psychiatrists Philippe Pinel and Etienne Esquirol, and they were doing this whole thing about being nice to people that were mentally ill and, like, trying to make asylums really nice places where people could do hobbies and...
We love him!
Yeah, so he wanted to bring that back to America and start having, like nice asylums where people would actually get better and stuff.
They used to put women in asylums if they like admitted to wanking and like having a sex drive, and they'd call them hysterical and they put them in an asylum.
I mean, in a way, like
I would be in a very secure asylum right now.
But also, if everybody had answered that honestly, then all the women would have been in asylum and nothing would get done. So he goes back to America because he wants to fight in the war of 1812. He's out there living his best life, trying to make nice asylums where people can get better. And then a big change happens to him, which changes his situation, and it's not being killed yet. What big change happens to him?
I really don't want him to die. And I'm not saying that we've had other episodes where I'm like, yeah, don't mind, but I really feel sad because we know what's coming and he just seems like a really top guy.
The only life change that I can relate to, mm-hmm. having gone through recently, is divorce.
Okay, interesting.
So did he get divorced?
Okay,
good guess. That's
great,
a really good guess.
Answer. That's a really good guess. I'm going to let the others have a go.
I'm thinking that maybe did the illness come back that he had when he was younger?
Ooh,
did he get ill again?
Nice.
That's a great guess too, yeah.
You haven't said if he's got a partner yet, right? We don't know.
I haven't, but I can tell you if you want to know.
Oh,
no,
I guess
you should guess. You should guess.
Well, I was saying maybe his wife died, but
okay,
doesn't sound like it from the way you answered that question. So, did he take up golf?
Okay,
that usually signals a life change.
Okay, none of you are correct. What happens is his dad died, and he inherits all of his huge family fortune.
Oh, okay.
So now George Parkman takes complete control of the family estate, and he bought vast amounts of land and real estate in Boston, including many poorly maintained tenements. So money lending and real estate now augmented his income, and he was reported to have a net worth of $500,000 in 1846, which is basically like $16.5 million today.
Whoa, he is doing well.
He is.
He'd have his own program on Netflix of like, yeah. I bought this house and then I flipped it and painted the wall.
And I'm still a really nice doctor.
Yeah. And I can cure your ailments.
Yeah. So question, what could be the motive for Webster to want to kill Parkman?
Well, I guess money. Now the guy's got 16 and a half mil.
Okay, yeah.
Perhaps it is money, and perhaps you're holding off the partner because he's married to the guy's sister, and if he dies, the sister inherits it all, and that's why he's murdered him, because he wants it for his family.
Interesting. Bum, very bum, interesting. Bum. Yeah.
I think it's an affair of the heart.
Ooh.
So, what was her name? Frederica.
Oh, yeah,
Pickle.
The wife is called...
she wasn't called.
Harriet Frederica Hickling.
Good Hickling.
Yeah, Hickling.
I reckon Hickling fancied lovely doctor trying to change asylums to make them better, suddenly got loads of money. Oh, hello, I have a bit of you. And they were having a little bit of fun time on the side.
Ooh. Okay, so jealousy and revenge.
Posh
and he called a bunch of clinics, like the Hickling Clinic for Niceness, and Webster's like, fuck you.
You're writing your name on this crap. Anyway, yes, love it, Taylor.
Yeah, no, that was my contribution.
Okay. Okay, none of you are quite right. Hannah is sort of the closest. The answer is debt.
Oh,
so okay.
It was like money, but debt. So Webster had financial problems. The family had been forced to give up a mansion that he had built in Cambridge. Although they were leasing a respectable but not grand house in 1849, he was in debt to a number of friends.
Uh-oh.
And his salary was as a meagre lecturer. Earnings could not cover his expensive, and he had a lot of expensive because he had these daughters, and two of them were like about to come out as debutantes, and that cost money. And he just obviously was used to this lavish lifestyle, and he could not live within his means as a lecturer. So
wow,
no tips
then.
If you're a shit lecturer.
Yeah,
no tips.
Exactly.
You should totally tip teachers. That's a side comment, but wow.
But also, like, what kind of society pays teachers so badly that they need tips? I mean, like,
every society.
Like, every society, apart from a couple of really good ones, like, teachers are buying breakfast and pencils for kids at the moment. Like, they're so badly paid. Anyway.
I love the idea of these, like, little shits in the class being like, Only a 5% tip today, I think, miss. I don't think your heart was in it.
I know, right?
But, yeah, just like, is... all right, miss, love that history class. Here's a little tenner for
you. Can you imagine? Like... And it's like Uber drivers and you get stuck. I mean, that's practically what fucking education is now, isn't it? All these hoops everyone has to jump through.
I love reviews of schools on Google because they're never good. It doesn't matter what the school is because it's always the students that review it. Because who else is going to review a school? On Google, and so they're always like spelled wrong. They're like, this are a terrible school, hate it. You know, it's amazing.
Like, this school gives really unfair detentions.
Yeah. Drunk women solving crime.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So Webster was known to be in debt to Parkman, and there had been arguments when Parkman had pressed Webster for the money. There is one more person that I need to tell you about who is integral to this story. That is the janitor.
Oh, it's got Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah, baby. I bring in the Scooby. I'm drunk, you guys.
I'd bring in the Scooby.
Bring in the Scooby.
I'm loving your Scooby, babe. I love Scooby.
Thank you. Thank you.
Katie's trying to be a millennial by going Scooby-Doo.
Yes. Scooby-Doo. Gonna mention something from the 60s. That makes me a millennial, right? This janitor is called Ephraim Littlefield. Now, he and his wife live in the basement of the medical college.
Ephraim, like F okay. dot frame.
E-P-H-R-A-I-M. Ephraim.
Oh, didn't hear that.
Go on, right correct
way.
Me.
No, I didn't hear it the right way, and you it made what? Me laugh.
We're just going to use his second name from now on.
Fine.
Littlefield. Okay, so he and his wife live in the basement of the medical college next to Professor John Webster's laboratory. Now, he knew Webster and the other Harvard doctors well, and he observed the study of medicine, including because they, you know, like dissected cadavers.
That's how
you say it. Cadavers. Thank you.
Cadavers. That sounds like a cocktail. I love it.
It sounds like you'd have it with caviar.
I know, yeah, right?
Got caviar on the I can't even say it. This
could so go for a cadaver right now.
Cavdar.
Yeah. Russian cadaver, or is it a cheap sturgeon?
We all need
cadaver.
Cadaver.
Okay. So, question. Does Littlefield like Webster?
I think that Webster would sometimes let him play with the cadavers. Because I don't think you live in the basement of a medical school and you don't want to play with some of the shit that's in there.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would be constantly opening jars of brains and like doing the whole thing. Mm. So I think he liked him because I think he let him be involved. And obviously there's a class difference there.
Yeah,
and okay. I think he would enjoy his company if he allowed it.
Okay, very interesting answer. You guys?
I love that you're just imagining this guy as like Frankenstein's monster, like living in the basement and just playing with brains. So much fun. Like a weird zombie man, like living underground.
Okay, I love it. I'm just going to come and tell you that he did not like him.
Okay.
He basically hates everyone, this janitor. He's like a real Scooby-Doo janitor, actually. He, like, if I could give him a catchphrase, it would be, "You think you're better than me?" because I decided to give him a catchphrase. That's what you do when you're researching a case. He's like, sort of has it in for all these snooty professors. He's full of hate, this guy. He hates the Irish. He thinks that Irish immigrants are pouring into Boston and taking his jobs. But he especially hates Webster.
Wow. Now it got a little bit Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah.
He's going to solve things on the board.
Well, hold that thought.
I can't believe he hates people more than the Irish. He hates Webster more than... I'm half Irish, who isn't, but I'm offended.
So Webster first borrowed $400 from Parkman in 1842, and he paid a tiny bit of it back, and he gave Parkman a note for $2,000. But basically, he does this kind of weird scam, Webster does, where he borrows again... And he kind of has this loan, and what he does is he secures money. He promises his, like, this mineral collection that's worth loads of money. So he kind of, like, borrows money on that, as that's, like, a guarantee to pay it back because his little mineral collection's worth loads of money. But then he borrows money off somebody else and he promises them the mineral cabinet. Mm. So basically, Parkman, the victim, finds out that he's falsely promised this minerals all over town. And he's really
annoyed. Why do they love these fucking minerals? Like, everyone's like, oh my God, your mineral cabinet is worth so much. Have my money.
They are mineral whores. And then he, so basically he's like, look, we can't both get the minerals. You're scamming everyone. I want my money back, please. And he's really annoyed. And so, because obviously Webster is trying to pull a fast one. So there's a confrontation which gets witnessed. Now, Parkman wants to get the money back from Webster. So he goes above Webster's head and he tries to get the money from the sale of the tickets for the lectures. So, you know, they have to buy tickets to get these lectures and everyone hates his fucking lectures and they buy them and then they don't go.
Mm.
He wants, instead of Webster getting the ticket money, he's going to get the ticket money because he's like, otherwise I'm never going to get my money.
And that was the first comedy agent.
So, obviously, we have a motive. Next thing that happens, Parkman disappears. Now, Parkman was last seen on November 23rd, and he was out collecting debts all around the town. Debts, even. Now, he normally always had lunch with his wife of 33 years at 2 p.m., and he doesn't turn up. Webster had suggested to him that they met at the medical college that afternoon at 1:30, and Parkman was last seen entering the college at 1:45. Question, where was Webster for the rest of the day after that time?
Ooh. Was he laminating photographs? Because...
Yeah.
Good of guess. My face.
Of Sam's face.
Because I was there. Shock. I can tell you what really happened with that mineral collection.
This is a brilliant twist.
Bane, she's got the down low on the quartz. She's going to tell us everything about the quartz. Where was he? Where was he really, or where did he say he was?
Where was he known to be?
Okay.
So he gets observed.
I reckon it's got to be something to do with the janitor, hasn't it? Is he is he one of those teachers, the lecturers that's chatting to the janitor because they're like, I'm a really good guy, guys, so I'm just going to chat with Littlefield here because, like, he's my bud.
Kind of a maybe figure.
Yeah, maybe the janitor was... Oh, having said that, maybe the janitor found the body and that's more likely.
Okay. Interesting. Hold that thought. Any further guesses?
Was he in a lecture? Because that's quite a good cover.
Ooh.
Especially if loads of people used to buy tickets and then not go. So he could just be like, I was teaching a lecture.
Yeah, and they'd all say that they saw him because they wanted to look like they went to their lecture. That's a great guess. Taylor?
Nothing further to add, Your Honour.
Okay. Fantastic. Sadly, you are all wrong, but those were brilliant guesses. So he was in his rooms and they were locked from the inside. The janitor heard water running, but Webster was home by 6 p.m. and then he attended a party at the house of a friend.
Creepy.
The Treadwells. Yes, and he showed no signs of distress.
Oh, sounds like a Jonathan Creek mystery. You know, like the room was locked from the inside and there was running water. And then it's all a big magic trick where they disappeared into a fountain.
I just Slash love comments. Watching Hannah's face light up when anyone says Jonathan Creek. Like the happiness. The happiness.
Straight away. That is my, that's my go-to reference. And I love it.
Happy place for HG.
No, she hasn't mentioned Dwayne The Rock Johnson yet. Come on.
I haven't. Give me time. Give me time. Okay. We're not at the end of the podcast yet.
All right.
Clearly, he's playing the janitor.
Would you wank over a laminated photo of Dwayne the Rock Johnson?
Do you know, it has to come up naturally,
Sam. Would she? She has. On November 24th, the family contact the brand newly established Boston Police. On November 26th, the family offer a $3,000 reward for finding Parker alive and then later $1,000 for his dead body.
Oh, devalued.
Yeah. Question, what does Webster do in the meantime?
So we haven't got a body yet.
No body
yet.
But
we know that there was a time in which he's probably killed him. Mm-hmm. Webster, I guess, just... What does Webster do then? Because, sorry, if I missed something here.
He's a lecturer.
Still
he's
just a lecturer.
He's also a lecturer.
They're both doctors, and Webster is a lecturer at Harvard about minerals and rocks and stuff.
I feel like he's juggling the minerals. Like, I feel like he's showing off. He's not showing remorse. This is a very... Yeah, he's like... showing it off down the street. I won't be needing these anymore.
Excellent.
No debts for this guy.
Okay.
They call me debt-free Webster.
I think maybe he's doing like a basement renovation because his janitor lives... I can't remember if the janitor lives underneath Webster's house or the other guy's house.
Yeah, no, he's under the lab. So he lives under the lab. Like, they have... Webster has a separate house, but Littlefield, the janitor, lives under his lab at the school.
Webster's lab.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Webster's doing a basement renovation to keep the janitor on side, because you probably saw him. Uh-huh. And then just, like, having a bath with some bubbles, you know, chilling out with a bit of Prosecco, with his mineral rock.
Trying to keep him sweet.
Bathing the minerals in moonlight, you know, like that's what you're meant to do if you're a bit woo-woo.
Activate their powers.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, excellent guesses, you guys. Anything to add, Hannah?
No.
Okay.
Your Honour.
So he pays back some of the debt to Parkman's brother, but he fails to ask how the search is going. So on November 27th, the brand new police make their first search of Webster's rooms. In the like the laboratory rooms. Question, do they find anything?
Yes.
Okay, yes from Taylor.
Forensic evidence is found.
I think no, because Webster's done little reno.
Okay, so we've got a no from Sam. Hannah, yes or no?
Yeah, I think this is where they find the forensic evidence, which of course at the time they wouldn't know was forensic evidence, but this is what they found.
Okay, only Sam is correct. Oh. They did not find anything at this time. These police are brand new. This is an important doctor.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing. They are young, dumb, and full of cum. So Littlefield is suspicious, and he's also concerned that he's going to be blamed. Because let's face it, he's the working class person.
Yeah.
Now, a few days before all this, Webster had asked him loads of questions about the dissecting vault, and he had given him something, and he had given him a turkey for Thanksgiving, because it was about to be Thanksgiving. And that was the first gift he'd ever given Littlefield, and they'd been working together for all these years, so Littlefield was increasingly suspicious.
Oh my God, was it not a turkey? It was actually the chest of the dead guy.
You know
and he made it look like a turkey.
It was a real turkey, but hold that thought. On November 28th, Webster was at the college early and Littlefield watched him from under the door and he could see as far as his knees. So Webster moved from the furnace to the fuel closet and back, making 8 separate trips.
Oh no. Ooh.
Yes. I love it's turned into Tom and Jerry now that we can just see the legs. Okay, this is we're going through all of the cartoons. I like it.
Also watched him from under the door, like just open the door a crack. Like what are you like he's lying on the floor, like
locked.
With eye
it's
under
locked.
The
locked. Yeah, no, he is doing that, but it's locked. So and then the furnace is burning really hot, but like so Webster is you know, all the kindling barrels are empty. And then when he finally Webster's gone, Littlefield goes into the room and there are weird kind of stains and Littlefield tastes one of them and it tastes like acid.
Okay.
Why would you do... Why do people
why
do that
would you
in police dramas
it?
All
like,
the time?
Honestly, if I've learned anything from this podcast, it's don't lick a crime scene.
And that is a useful skill for life.
Yeah.
That will have made this all worth it.
Like, that is another life hack.
Just don't lick it.
Don't lick it. If you don't know what it is, don't lick it.
Do you know what I'd lick? Dwayne Johnson's...
Hey, she got there.
When I was little and my mum asked me if I know what sex is, I said it was two people licking each other all over.
Wow.
That's just it. Imagine the amount of saliva you'd need for that.
But you know what? That's how it should be.
Yeah. I hope she said that's a good start.
Yeah, that is
She laughed in my face and was like, no, someone puts their dick in you.
Okay, I'm going to move stuff along and tell you guys. Littlefield breaks into Webster's room when he's not there. He breaks into the room, he smashes the place up, he breaks into the vault, he does a tunnel, it takes him ages, he goes into the furnace, he finds all this, and eventually he finds a human pelvis, a dismembered thigh, and the lower part of a leg.
Whoa.
So he sounds the alarm, and a bunch of men come, and they start gathering and excavating all of this stuff. Police arrest Webster. And
can I just say my favourite bit of that was you saying, he does a tunnel. I just love that as a phrase.
You know what? I wrote it so much more eloquently than that.
No, but it's great. It's to the point, and we got it. He does a tunnel. It's just like, yeah, he does a tunnel. What? He did it.
He did it. Anyone confused? There's a tunnel. Okay, so does Webster confess?
No. I mean, he's sort of banged to rights, isn't he? But yeah, you're right. He is this privileged guy who thinks there's no consequences to anything he does. And and if it ends up being his word against Littlefield's, you know, it could go either way. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think he says he's not guilty.
Okay.
Yeah, he can't confess because then we get into reasonable doubt. And if he had confessed, then we wouldn't have that.
Someone remembers the beginning of the podcast.
Princeton's in New Jersey.
Okay, so he gets arrested. He denies knowledge of the crime. When he gets told that what Littlefield had found, he exclaimed, "That villain, I'm a ruined man." And he blamed the janitor. But then, so he's sitting in the cell and he puts something in his mouth. Question, what did he put in his mouth?
I'm not going to go for the obvious.
Yeah, it's that.
It's not Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Sorry, the janitor put something in his mouth Webster?
Webster is in a cell.
Oh, he's in a cell.
And he's seen to put something in his mouth.
Is it something to escape, like a hairpin sort of thing?
Great guess. Anyone?
Is it cyanide or something? Is it a cyanide pill if they were around?
Yes, Hannah, it is strychnine.
Ah, okay.
And now
strychnine
admits,
come dancing.
Hey.
I do puns too,
where all the celebrities wear sequins and then kill themselves.
Yay. Let's pitch this for Black Mirror. So he put what he had later admitted to be strychnine into his mouth, but it only made him ill and he survived. So meanwhile, the police are finding shitloads of stuff. They find a jawbone in the furnace. There's weird acid stains by the sink. They're piecing this body together. So I'm going to say that a trigger warning now because there's some gruesome stuff. They dumped out a chest from which came a foul odour, and there was an armless, headless, hairy and partly burned torso. They found a saw nearby. Then they found a thigh stuffed inside the torso, and the heart and organs were missing. So we have some forensics now, and I promised you one of the earliest uses of forensics to identify a body, and by God, I am delivering. As the remains had been partially cremated, dental evidence and bone fragments were used to verify that they were Dr. Parkman's. And they were already at a medical college, so they had good facilities to examine the body. And they laid out all the parts, they tested them, and they wrote up all the descriptions. And they conjectured that a hole underneath the left breast might have been where the stab that killed the victim. And by the end of the day, they had estimated the man's height to have been 5'10", which would be an exact match to George Parkman. And Parkman's brother-in-law comes in and says that he'd seen the extreme hairiness on Parkman's body and confirmed that the body must be his.
That's a really harsh way to identify a body.
It's
yeah, he was really hairy, actually. So that probably is him.
That's definitely as hairy as he was. So thousands of people lined the street for Parkman's funeral. And of course, 5,000 people started touring the crime scene. I mean, sick fucks. Make a podcast. Come
5,000 people.
Yeah, he was quite beloved. So Webster goes to trial. He tries to claim that the body is for a dissection, but the forensics are too good. They're like, no deal, Webster. It's a huge trial. It's, you know, people traveling to come and watch it because there's no Netflix. There's no TikTok. Webster is not allowed to defend himself according to Massachusetts law, but he like gets annoyed and starts trying to defend himself anyway. They tell him not to, but he takes to the stand. Now, the judge hates him and loves Parkman, the victim. So there's mass bias in this case. And that is partly why he makes the historic statement of that I flagged up earlier about reasonable doubt. So it's precedent setting, the ruling that he says that they only need to find reasonable doubt that the body is Parkman's, because before that, the standard in murder cases was proof to absolute certainty that that was the body of the victim. Question, does Webster get found guilty?
Oh, I bet he doesn't. I think it's not guilty, although he very, very obviously is. I've just got a horrible feeling that he got away with this.
Okay.
I think he's guilty because, like, the judge is on his side, and we all know about like corrupt judicial systems all over the world. So I feel like if the judge is on your side, then you're doing pretty well.
It's to picture a jury, right? Though, so it's 12
a judge,
angry men.
It's a judge and a jury, but the judge is very prejudiced against Webster.
Yeah, the judge hates him.
The judge has like a wig on, and he like has that little cape thing, and he looks really important. So the jury are going to be like, oh well. I want to agree with the judge.
We have to listen to the important man in the wig.
He's wearing a cape, and underneath there could be a Superman costume. We just don't know.
That's a good point. I think he's found guilty.
Yeah. And then he invents dictionaries when he's in jail.
Okay, so he is found guilty. Judge Shaw directed that he should be removed from this place, blah, blah, blah. Taken to a place behind the neck.
I thought he was friends with the Shaws.
He was, but they like the other guy more. And it's like this other Shaw. There's like a Pastor Shaw. There's like this guy, the Judge Shaw. I don't know how many Shaws. It's raining Shaws.
Incest.
He says, you will be hung until you are dead, and may God in his infinite goodness have mercy on your soul. But as we know, you guys have talked about this, Webster is pretty posh. So he goes about trying to get a pardon, because posh people don't normally get hanged. Obviously, it's one rule for one. And that is why you can go and shoot pheasants in groups larger than six.
Yeah, Jesus.
He's trying to get this writ of error. He's writing to pastors. And I think it was assumed that he would generally succeed because he's posh. But this governor bloke that he writes to doesn't want to be a hypocrite, because someone else tried to get pardoned and he was like, no, you have to die. So he didn't want to look like it was one rule for one, even though it totally is. So it's not looking good. So Webster suddenly writes a confession, but he says that it was self-defense. And he tries again to get a commutation. Question, does he succeed? Is he hung or not hung?
I feel like he's not hung.
Okay.
I don't know why, I just keep thinking that he's going to get away with that. I think it's because of all his privilege and how posh he is.
Yeah,
you guys? I just remembered somebody writing in and getting angry that we said hung because it's hanged. And fuck you, person who wrote in.
I'm an enemy of grammar.
I think he's hanged.
If he's hanged, how can you be well hung?
Well, we're back to The Rock, aren't we?
Always. It always comes back to him.
Okay.
I think he dies because I want to believe that justice succeeds.
Okay. You know what? Good thought. He is hung.
Wow.
He is taken to Leverett Street Jail in 1850 in April.
Can I just say that I'm sorry that I cheered that someone was hung?
Like, you know what? It's okay.
I sort of feel good about it, but it's also like just disturbing.
You know what? This is a safe space for all the feelings that we have about murder. He died within 4 minutes.
Is that quite a long time?
No, like they would in the olden days. We learned the average. They'd be hung for 15 minutes. And if you were still alive after 15 minutes, you had a chance at living. So this case has been enduring in its impact because it was the first case in the United States where dental evidence and scientific testimony were accepted in a murder trial. And Charles Dickens visited Boston in 1867 and demanded to see the room where Dr. Parkman had been murdered. It's been made into loads of TV shows. It's considered controversial. A century after the case, one author observed, the Parkman murder case stands as a classic example of how a jury can reach a sound verdict despite an unfair trial, because the judge was so prejudiced. Mm. But I think the moral of the story is rich white men do get punished if they are unpopular enough. Yay! Cheers!
Cheers!
Drunk women solving crime.
We have an email from our listener, Felicity, and she says, hi there, I've got a listener crime for you. Firstly, though, I love the Stone of Scone episode as I'm Scottish and it's one of our proud moments, and I've definitely upset you again because I've not pronounced that correctly, and I'm sorry, Felicity. And she says, so I got up one morning and went down to get my bike from the stair where I left it locked up, the bit of my block of flats that is public. As I unlocked it, I noticed that every single cable on the bike had been cut, gears and brakes. Obviously, I couldn't cycle to work and had to spend £30 getting them replaced. The bike shop people were very nice and didn't charge me for their time, just parts. That is very nice. Their theory is that someone tried to steal the bike and was annoyed that they couldn't, so they took their revenge. Mm. What do you think? Love the show. Felicity.
Well, I mean, which part of Scotland is she in? Because if this happened in Edinburgh during August, part of me thinks that somebody... And because I've stayed in, you know, those flats in Edinburgh where they have the big stairwell in the middle. And maybe it was somebody who lived there full time thought that the bike belonged to one of the fucking loud comedians upstairs staying for the month. And they were like, oh, just, you know. So it was revenge, but it wasn't on you, Felicity. It was on...
You were just a proxy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Because I've sometimes thought, like, you know, when you pay £2,000 to £3,000 for a flat in Edinburgh during August, and then you... Like, there are people that live there the whole time, aren't there? And I always think people in Edinburgh must hate August. They must have had such a good August this year, apart from all of the businesses.
Yeah. It's a real bittersweet victory.
I mean, as one of the loud, horrible comedians, I would say it's probably not Edinburgh, though, because there are a lot of cobbles in Edinburgh and you wouldn't want to cycle over those. Maybe. You'd have a sore little tush. So I wonder if it was a different part of Scotland.
And, we don't know.
Maybe someone just walked past with a spiky belt on. You know, accessorizing very in.
And it was a complete accident.
Yeah, you can, like, accessorize, like, your jeans with, like, you little spikes
on. They would have presumably injured lots of other people that they walked past, though, if it was that.
Well, if it's a remote part of Scotland, there might not have been a lot of people around.
Okay,
so they might have, like, accidentally got caught on the bike, and then it just cut through all of those cables, and they didn't even realise. Yeah. I once got caught on someone's coat on a tube by accident. It was a bit of my bag. She just walked past and my coat got caught on her. And she was actually very angry about it. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't do this on purpose. Like, we were like stuck together and I had to like get out of the tube and like miss my stop. And like, I had to unhook the bit of her coat and it was all like sticking out because it was all like a weaved coat thing. So it's a definite, you know,
it's possible. It's possible. Okay, life. good theory. You got anything to add, Taylor?
Well, that just reminded me of, I was in New York and my hair got stuck on somebody's umbrella. And it was so busy that they didn't notice. And I was just like in shock. And I was just like walking backwards. I was like, excuse me. Oh my God. And like, we went like a full block before they noticed. I was like, just going backwards.
Oh my God, New Yorkers, man.
Crazy. It's a great city.
Great city.
Whereas Londoners shout in your face about it.
Yeah. I got to say, I think the bike shop are right. I think somebody tried to nick it and then they got pissed off and out of spite, they were like, well, fuck you then. And
it's just definitely
like
spite. It's just whether it was somebody trying to steal it or is there a secret enemy? Or was it a romantic gesture from a very possessive partner?
Ooh,
spend some
toxic
time with me. Yeah.
Or was it
you have to call in sick, huh?
Yeah, Felicity, was there anyone in your life that kept saying, you spend more time cycling than you do with me?
You're always commuting to work.
Yeah, was it someone who just... Because if they cut the brakes, like, that's really dangerous.
Mm. Yes.
That's like...
It's aggressive.
That's like Webster. I'm sorry to make a parallel.
That is about a psycho doctor that didn't have any money.
Yeah, like the next step is like cutting up your body and stuffing your thigh and your torso and burning it on a furnace. So
whoever did this, you're well rid of them.
And we're sorry about that.
We're sorry. I hope you've had no repeat crimes, so they are gone, we can presume.
I hope you found love at the bike shop as well, because I think that there's some people there that seem very kind.
Yeah.
And I hope that this had, you know, it was one of those things, days that started
not
badly.
Charging for labour, they did it. They were like, oh, that cute girl's going to have to come in and get this fixed.
Oh, in which case, I hope that you're not with that
person. I'm going to be
now.
A hero that doesn't charge for labour. Oh,
yeah,
that's
Felicity,
untoward. I
hope whoever you're with, break up with them. That's what I'm saying, just in case they were linked to this.
Yeah, break up with everybody.
I think
that is an official drunk women recommend.
Either way, you should give up on sustainable transport and go back to more normal methods that ruin the environment.
The lesson and the is trash the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Okay. I hope that helps, Felicity. I think we solved it.
Yay.
We have just enough time to ask the fantastic Samantha Baines, what are you up to? Where can we find you? What do you have going on? What's coming out next?
I'm at home a lot.
Okay.
Because it's a pandemic. But no, so I have a podcast called The Divorce Club.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I'm a divorced lady. Don't worry, I'm fine. I'm really okay. I'm having a lovely time and lots of orgasms. So I interview other divorced people. Mainly to make friends and keep me busy. But
in a couple of years, you guys can go on it. That'll be good.
I'm here for you if you're, you know, if you're feeling a bit like lockdown crazy
Can't
with
wait
the hubbies,
to come on.
Just let me know. I'll give you some tips. So it was basically like I got divorced and didn't know anyone else my age who'd got divorced and wanted to talk to people. So yeah, so I just talked to lots of people with different divorce stories and it's like hopefully quite upbeat and positive, but also like the real side of divorce.
Yeah, amazing. What a great podcast.
Oh, thanks. Well, yes. And it's for, you know, if you're not divorced, but you've had a breakup, like most people, you can still relate. But
we can all relate, yeah.
Yeah, so we, it's just in-depth discussions. The first episode was with Sarah Milliken, and we have some great people on. There are men allowed too, but like only a couple because, you know.
What did they do exactly?
Yeah, they get too much exposure anyway. you can get it on all the podcast devices, and it is an upbeat conversation to change the kind of taboo subject of divorce and look at the real side of things.
Fantastic.
And I also have a children's book out. I know I talked about wanking a lot, but sometimes I'm like quite sensible and don't swear. And during those times, I wrote a children's book. So it's called
awesome.
Harriet versus the Galaxy. And
great.
It's about a little girl that has a hearing aid like me, and her hearing aid translates alien languages.
Nice, that's cool.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So her and her gran are secret astronaut spies.
Love
and they protect
it.
The Earth from aliens. And Harriet's the only
fantastic.
One who can communicate with them.
Oh, what awesome. Age group is it for?
So it's for like 6 to 12 year olds. So the aliens Harriet are fighting are the munchers who eat things on Earth, and that's why they disappear. Okay. So there's like sock muncher who eats your socks. And there's knicker muncher, and knicker muncher eats Gran's knickers off her bottom while she's wearing them.
Oh no.
Yeah, shocking. sometimes that happens to me at the gym. On the way home I'm like, oh, this is going commando. Yeah. Forgot to pack some pans. But yeah, so it's called Harriet versus the Galaxy, and it's available in all good bookshops.
Fantastic. So one more time, thank you so much, Samantha Baines.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way. Because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.